Welcome to SMR's This Week in Review podcast, where we highlight the recent news in sports medicine research. This week, we have an interview with Dr. John D. Kelly IV, an orthopedic surgeon with Penn Medicine in Philadelphia. We sat down at Presbyterian Hospital for a short conversation, so please excuse the background noise. Dr. Kelly, what do you think is exciting in shoulder research now?
Well, I think that we confine our conversation to throwers and rotator cuff and instability for the throwers. Steve Thomas has been a real thought leader. We're increasingly aware of the problems with GERD. Everyone thought that retroversion was maybe a good thing, but Steve's been a real paradigm shifter in recognizing that maybe increased retroversion may potentiate development of GERD. In other words, people with higher degrees of retroversion may have a thicker posterior capsule. So Steve has been a real thought leader in measuring posterior capsule thickness in throwers and also quantifying the association between posterior capsule thickness and retroversion. So I think that the precise role of GERD as it relates to scapula kinematics is a very, very exciting area of research. Steve is another thought leader in this in that he perhaps denoted a dose response of increasing GERD leading to maybe increasing levels of scapulokinesis. Perhaps GERD is the sentinel or the seminal event that occurs in throwers, which may lead to dyskinetic scapulae.
How long does it take to see changes in glenohumeral internal rotation deficits, or GERD?
Well, Steve did a nice study in just one season in scholastic athletes. And over the course of a season, due to hysteresis or thixoresis, you can get it after one bout of throwing. But we think the prolonged changes occur really as quickly as over the course of several weeks. His dose response idea came from looking at scholastic versus collegiate. The scholastic high school kids had GERD, but no scapula changes. The college throwers actually had increased levels of GERD, and then the scapula started kicking out. So suggesting, not proving, suggesting perhaps a dose response that the shoulder can tolerate some degrees of GERD without developing scapula changes.
So do you think that key is to incorporate the stretches to prevent GERD as a continuous part of the warm-up program, or more for rehabilitation?
I think prevention is everything. I think GERD sleeper stretches, cross-arm adduction stretches are very important, but also don't neglect the kinetic chain. Some other research has shown that really the lower body issues can be very, very important to development of shoulder pain, particularly weak hip abductors, lead leg loss of internal rotation, lead leg quad tightness, scapulokinesis, and GERD all go in the mix in terms of keeping your throws out of the OR.
And how young do you think they should start doing some of these sleeper stretches?
I think as soon as they begin throwing, it's nothing wrong with doing it at the little league level. I think throwing equals stretches. As long as they're throwing, they should be doing the stretches to avert some of these potentially pathologic changes that do occur.
And have you seen these changes from the young kids all the way up to the elite level?
Absolutely. We do have Craig Morgan would call stretch non-responders. Some of the more collegiate professional athletes that you may come across have more stubborn posterior capsule thickness, which may not respond to the stretches. And those patients, if we ever need to do surgery, are quick to do a posterior capsulotomy, which in my hands has worked very, very well.
And where do you think this is going in the future? Where do you see how this will affect the athletic trainers and the orthopedics?
I think increasing awareness, vigilance. I think that thanks to Steve is a really non-invasive way of measuring retroversion, posterior capsule thickness. So you can actually not only look at the kids that are clinically at risk, but also the ones that maybe have pathology that puts them at risk.
Do you think his work is suggesting that we'll be seeing the use of musculoskeletal ultrasound more often, or more of these simple stretch measurements that he's using?
I think that we would probably just do the screening, stretching, or just as a baseline treatment protocol. But I think for maybe the problem athletes who may not be responding, that I could see a real role for ultrasound, looking at retroversion, looking at posterior capsule thickness, prognosticating, you know, if they're heading in the right direction or not.
Do you have any other comments related to shoulder and sports medicine that you think is exciting these days?
Well, I think that the treatment of instability is evolving too. We've had the blessing of doing some work with Rimplissage, the filling of Hill Sachs lesions with infraspinatus tenodesis that was pioneered by Gene Wolfe. We're looking at MRI data saying that that infraspinatus tenodesis does incorporate into the Hill Sachs lesion, and this biologic tissue may actually remodel to fibrocartilage in time. We're also exploring in the lab ways of creating instability models in the rat, so we can actually think of ways to do perhaps better ways of treating glenoid bone defects. Lastly, we're looking at the glenoid tract concept as proposed by Etwy and others. In other words, the precise area where the glenoid articulates with the humerus, looking at how much of a fill do we need to fill in Hill-Sachs lesions, how much glenoid insufficiency is really critical. So this is a really a great step forward in the potential all-arthroscopic approach to shoulder instability.
What about the implications of diabetes on shoulder pathology? And, you know, now that we're seeing diabetes more often in our athletic population, what's the implications of that?
Well, we're looking at the shoulder as an organ, and as the term idiopathic adhesive capsulitis may need to be abandoned, because most of the patients we see with this affliction have an inflammatory process, and either they have a blood sugar issue, either they have metabolic syndrome, early diabetes, or they have an autoimmune or thyroid issue. So we are doing a prospective study now looking at early markers of hyperglycemia, serum insulin levels, C-reactive protein levels, HDL triglyceride ratios. We think that most of our stiff shoulders that we see in the office are showing that organ failure, if you will, of the shoulder as a response to metabolic syndrome, which is, we now know, pro-inflammatory. So it's amazing, Jeff, how many people I've diagnosed with early diabetes who present in my office with a stiff shoulder without any awareness of any sugar issues. We do hemoglobin A1C, we do a fasting glucose, and all of a sudden their numbers are abnormal. So it's a way we can actually play a real doctor and look at the shoulder as an organ and shoulder stiffness as perhaps organ failure.
We'd like to thank Dr. Kelly for his time. This past week, we also had 3 posts on sportsmedres.org. That's res.org. The first post reported that both a low and high dose of corticosteroids reduced pain, restored function, and improved range of motion among patients with adhesive capsulitis. The second post highlighted that coaches who were well-trained to implement injury prevention warm-up programs are as effective as supervision of a physiotherapist at training sessions. And finally, the third post was a policy statement from the American College of Physicians and the Federation of State Medical Boards regarding online medical professionalism, patient and public relationships. Don't forget that we also share extra material on social media, so remember to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or LinkedIn. We'll be back next week with more sports medicine research. Until then, have a fun one.